This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
A lie can travel halfway around the world while the truth is putting on its shoes. Mark Twain, 1919.
Did he really say that? Twain died in 1910, so how did he often get credited for a quote he neither said nor wrote? Welcome to Ring True, a six-part miniseries on the psychology, politics, and business model behind the spread of misinformation in science news. Now, over the course of the next six episodes, we'll be discovering the history and evolution of misinformation, both in the physical and digital spaces. You'll also meet the heroes and villains of the post-truth era, and hopefully find your place as you navigate a world of eroding trust and accountability. I'm Caroline Oh, and in this first episode, we'll be starting at the very beginning with the origin story. Garson O'Toole started the website Quote Investigator back in 2010 to fact-check the origins of popular quotes. 7 years later, he published the book Hemingway Didn't Say That, The Truth Behind Familiar Quotes, a culmination of his investigations into how quotes get misquoted, including the one you just heard. Now, you might also have heard several variations of it, crediting Twain or other famous people, including this one.
A lie gets halfway around the world before truth puts on its boots.
Now, that was incorrectly attributed to Winston Churchill by the New York Times in 1981. So, if Twain didn't say it, and Churchill didn't say it, and Hemingway definitely didn't say it, then who did? O'Toole's investigation traced the adage back to satirist Jonathan Swift, who wrote "Falsehood flies and the truth comes limping after it" in The Examiner. Now, this was in 1710. And while there's no mention of boots or shoes, it's certainly fitting, although ironic, that a famous adage about truthiness found itself misquoted and misattributed over the course of time. The term fake news may be relatively new, popularized no doubt by the current president of the United States, Donald Trump.
You are fake news.
You're fake news. You have an agenda.
It's made up by the newspapers. It's fake news.
That is a lot of fake news back there.
I'm very proud to hear the president use the term fake news.
The fake news media or press. Fake. Fake. They have to lead that word.
But fake news in itself is, well, old news. Rumors, falsehoods, and conspiracies have long been around.
This attempt to explain certain events or facts as the logical or illogical result of secret plots by powerful people who want to advance an agenda regardless or against the common good. It involves basically three elements: secrecy, power, and self-interest.
That's Hugo Leal of the Center for Research in the Arts, Social Sciences and Humanities, also known as CRASH, at the University of Cambridge.
When I came to CRASH, I came with a small preliminary study on Pizzagate, which was this conspiracy theory that started off as a rumor that Hillary Clinton and the Clintons and the Democratic Party apparatus, they were running a pedophilia ring of a pizza parlor in Washington. And this started as a small rumor. And then it spread throughout the internet. We now know how it went from being just a rumor to a full-fledged conspiracy theory. But usually this is what happens.
So the question is, are we seeing a resurgence of misinformation? And if so, does this resurgence carry a more sinister implication today? To answer that, we'll be focusing on three main issues in science journalism. That's vaccination, climate change, and the Flat Earth movement.
More recently, I've been investigating science-related conspiracy theories such as the anti-vax. And what I've been finding in these networks, time and again, is that they are closely related to certain economic interests, namely the ones promoting alternative lifestyles, alternative medicine, which many people don't know, but it's a multi-billion dollar industry. And so these are being peddled alongside. This is a very important factor.
The jade egg is where women insert the jade egg in their lady part to help tone the pelvic floor.
Chocolate lines up planetarily with the sun. Chocolate is an octave of sun energy. And actually, cacao's right up with the center of the sun, which is the center of the heart, which is called the sacred heart.
Mineral magic magnesium. Get your Z's from the Dead Seas.
It's green coffee beans. And when turned into a supplement, this miracle pill can burn fat fast for anyone who wants to lose weight.
All right then, so what makes a conspiracy theory? According to Hugo, there's always a blueprint.
That is where the Jewish question always pops up. Because even though the Jews are not being singled out as the main actors these days, we see the same tropes and the same modules and the same blueprints being applied, in this case, rather ironically, to Muslims, for example. So Islamophobia kind of builds upon the same tropes and the same approach that anti-Semitism and anti-Semitics would use in the past.
There's also a pattern of deep distrust of authority.
Difference being that with anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, they would focus on the powerful individual, the Jew, the scary Jew, who would be the puppeteer and would control the world. Whereas now, they portray the Muslims as this collective entity and identity which operates as a common machine with a common goal, thus going through this process of, I would call it, otherization, using feminist theory, in which you portray the collective Muslim as the other, thus creating a new identity for yourself and an artificial separation with the other.
So it's us and them. Someone is always plotting against you. Or in other words, the left tends to be suspicious of the right, and of course, vice versa. And voters on the extreme left and extreme right are far more likely to believe in conspiracy theories. Well, they tend to make clear-cut assumptions about the world. They rigidly classify people, institutions, or events as either positive or negative. So that rigid style of thinking is also demonstrated in the belief that they are simple political solutions to societal problems. Now, that's according to findings made by VU University, Amsterdam.
This is an important development in the sense that we are using the same modules, the same frameworks, but applying them to different issues, different actors, different phenomena. But I think there is a common thread throughout history when it comes to using and disseminating conspiracy theories.
So who are these conspiracy theorists? There are at least several studies that attempted to answer that, but it's not really that straightforward. So let's take immigration-related conspiracy theories, for example. A recent YouGov study in collaboration with Hugo's research team found that the belief that government is hiding the truth about immigration is present across the political spectrum, although it leans heavier to the right. But what about vaccine hesitancy? Now that is less determined by ideological affiliation.
When you talk about migration-related conspiracy theories, it's rather clear that we are talking about a certain part of the political spectrum. It's very easy to issue an anti-migrant, Islamophobic political profile. It's people on the right, white, men, not great levels of education, social grade rather low as well. When it comes to anti-vax, for example, they are left and they are right. They are city and they are countryside. They are educated and they are uneducated. So it's not that clear cut. And so we have to differentiate between conspiracy theories, between countries, political situation. It's much more complex than just there is a societal trend these days that is favorable to the dissemination of conspiracy theories. I think it's more complex than that.
So even if it seems like some of us are more gullible than others, the truth is no one is immune to conspiracy theories, not even Hugo.
I don't subscribe to the idea that believing in conspiracy theories is a pathology. Otherwise, we would be a very, very sick society because, as I said earlier, conspiracy theories are mainstream. And I myself am not immune, for example. And our best hunch, our best educated guess would be that they are much more widespread in the present. And political appropriation, manipulation is, I think, a big part of it. The social media platforms and the internet is another driving factor.
We'll get to the mainstreaming of misinformation in later episodes. But for now, what purpose do conspiracies serve? Tina Camellia spent the spring term at the University of Cambridge looking for the answer.
Many studies in psychology show that we are simply just trying to make sense of our world, right? A world which is getting far more complex and confusing because we now have far more information at our disposal than ever before. We've always relied on patterns and regularities to find a causal explanation for anything. So when something random happens, but especially when something that's bizarre or distressing happens, we are drawn to believe that it happened because someone or something made sure it happened for possibly a sinister reason.
And that is how conspiracy theories come about. We needed a proverbial bad guy to put the blame on.
Psychologist Sander van der Linden explains that when we encounter a new piece of information that conflicts with an older set of beliefs, our brain tends to produce this desire to reduce that dissonance, that cognitive dissonance. So we engage in some form of selective exposure to reinforce the older belief. But cognitive biases are often a result of that, because of our brain's attempt to simplify information processing. It also causes disenchantment with politicians and scientists who are typically figures of authorities, because these figures of authorities are the ones who tend to present information that's conflicting with our older set of beliefs. There's also social motivation. This motivation to be unique, but at the same time also to belong to the few special ones, some sort of tribalism. I mean, we are, after all, social creatures, but also with egos, right?
So people were quick to dismiss conspiracy theories in the past as sad, mad, or bad. Now that's up until Trump's election, and then the Brexit vote, when we started to see the mainstreaming of conspiracy theories. Fast forward 3 years later, we now see misinformation sweeping across the world. Brazil, the Philippines, Italy, even Hungary.
Rappler, since you are a fake news outlet, I am not surprised that your articles are also fake.
the Hungarian people is not given the facts, but given some alternative facts or fiction, we will reply to answer with facts. We feel this is an obligation and we will do it.
These days, we're seeing misinformation being co-opted for political gain. And all you need is manufactured uncertainty. Naomi Oreskes, the science historian and also author of the book Merchants of Doubt, explains.
I was always interested in broader questions about scientific knowledge, why we believe some things and not others. How do scientists come to consensus? And what does it take for scientists to say, yes, we know that this is true? No. So I had the idea that we could test this question of whether or not there was a consensus among scientists, active scientists, people who are actually doing research and publishing in peer-reviewed journals. So not the public at large, not politicians. So I certainly thought we would get some that disagreed. And when we found nothing, then I thought, oh, this is a result that needs to be published. When my article on the scientific consensus came out, I started getting emails threatening me, saying that I was a communist, that I should be fired from my job. So I started doing research on the people who were attacking me. And that's when I discovered a startling fact. They were the same people who had attacked the scientists on all these different issues. Then I began to realize this is a debate, but this is not a scientific debate. And if it's not a scientific debate, then the question becomes, well, what sort of a debate is it? All of these issues are issues that involve the need for government action. As the scientific community begins to coalesce around believing that climate change is underway, it's at that very moment that we see the think tanks moving into the media environment and trying to argue the opposite. What is of use is if you have an independent group who can look at the evidence, look at the data, and work through the issue of what would solutions to that problem look like. It devolves into something that's highly partisan and has made up its mind in advance what the answer is. So what we begin to see is think tanks taking up climate change as an issue, but not from the point of view of science, but from the point of view of the politics. That's when a penny dropped, because then I began to realize none of this is about the science. All of this is a political debate about the role of government.
Former technology editor at The Guardian, Charles Arthur, likens the gradual but eventual threat of misinformation to global warming. Now, he calls it social warming. And that's exactly what we'll be focusing on next week. And now for our words of the week. Misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. Misinformation, that's false information disseminated without harmful intent. Disinformation, false information that's deliberately created and shared with harmful intent. Malinformation, information that is based on reality with the intent to cause harm. And that's it from us this week. You've been listening to Ring True, a six-part mini-series on misinformation in science news. I'm Caroline Oh for BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.